It's a real blessing to be able to actually sing with my husband, because we haven't done this in years, because we could never prepare, and he could never commit to what Sabbath he's going to be home. So...
So I'm going to be taking his place. I'm Ian Dowie.
Thank you. A while back, I said I would be willing to tell a little story about a Christmas that we celebrated in Africa that I, not a single year goes by that I don't think of this, because it was such a special year. But first of all, I want to share a few texts. I think I know all the major texts in the Bible about fear by heart, because it's something I've really needed. I need those texts. Isaiah 41:10 is one of my favorite. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yea, I will help you. I will uphold you with the right hand of my righteousness. Then verse 13, for I, the Lord, will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you. I can't tell you how many times that has been a source of great strength to me. But all good stories start with once upon a time. So once upon a time, long, long ago, about 25 years ago, in a faraway country, it was the country of West Africa, and it was the area of West Africa. As you visualize Africa, the continent, you know, there's a bulge on the, I guess as you're looking at it, the left side. So we were right in the middle of that bulge in a country called Burkina Faso. We were in a village called Loropani, out in the bush, many miles from, I guess you would say, what we call civilization. But anyway, we were there. We were in the middle of a seven-year stint with Adventist Frontier Missions. We were about halfway through, 3.5 years into it. And our bosses called. They wanted us to go to Mali to welcome a new missionary family. So we were thrilled to do this, and we were going to get a little vacation, you know, visit another country. So we were really happy about this. It was not too long before Christmas. I don't remember exactly how many days, but I think it was right before Christmas, about 10 days. And so we went over there. It's about 300 miles from where we were, and picked them up in the capital city of Bamako. So we did a few days of plain tourists. We took them around the city and tried to share what we knew about the customs and things like that. And then the plan was that on Sunday, the guys would leave, and they were going to the neighboring country of Guinea to pick up a bunch of equipment that some previous missionaries had left. Now, these missionaries that had left had found hostility, and they had actually dealt with quite a bit of trauma while they were there. So they had left all their equipment. So we knew that the guys weren't really going into an area that was considered particularly friendly. So we were a little concerned about that. But, you know, we had confidence. And we, of course, AFM wanted the guys to retrieve all this equipment. It was solar equipment and things like that. So part of the story is that our family was quite fragmented at the time. My older daughter, she had stayed in the States on our furlough. She was 16 by then and needed to stay at academy. So she was at a boarding academy in the States. Our daughter Amy and our student missionary, our daughter Amy was around 13 at the time, and we had a student missionary, and they were staying in our village because together they had planned a Christmas play with the children or the young people of our church. They had planned this Christmas play, and they felt like they needed to stay there and continue with the plans. After all, we were going to be back by Christmas. So I didn't like the idea, but I thought, well, they were so excited about playing house, you know, and she was 13, the student missionary was probably 20. So I felt like I didn't have too much to worry about. But as all you moms know, you know, the family was fragmented. You know, my daughter's in the States, and one's over here, and we're going over there. So I was a little stressful, just having ourselves fragmented like that. Well, anyway, the guys, off they went. And the idea was that they were going to leave early Sunday. They'd get there by Sunday afternoon. They were going to just quickly, you know, pack that stuff up and come back. They hope to be back by no later than Monday, possibly Tuesday at the very latest. And, of course, They don't have, this is before cell phones, this is in the mid-90s, so there's no cell phones. And in actuality, there's very few phones, private phones at all, in this area of Africa. So communication, I knew, would be nil. And so we just had to believe that everything would turn out okay. Well, I had been there long enough by then to know that I needed to really trust God in these situations. My husband previously at times had had to go on trips and something would happen. A car breakdown or delayed and he wouldn't come back at the expected hour. And I had learned, you know, you're kind of busy. You ladies know what I mean. You're planning the funeral, you know. When you really don't need to go there, you know, you don't need to do that. You need to have a little more faith. But anyway, I had learned by then some promises about fear and trusting God and being patient. So I was a little more experienced in that. But anyway, she and I were actually stuck pretty far from town where we were staying. So there weren't places that we could go visit that readily. But we became more acquainted. Our boys were doing their homeschool, and everything seemed to be moving along. And she mentioned a few times, you know, concerns. So we were praying for the guys, of course. But I kept reassuring her. Everything was fine. I talked to her last night on the phone, and she said, oh, yeah. She said, you told me, oh, the guys are probably sitting under a tree eating mangoes. Don't worry. You know, so apparently, I allayed her fears. But around Wednesday, I, you know, now we hadn't heard from them for longer than expected, but my son became ill with malaria, which wasn't extremely uncommon. So he became ill, and I knew it was malaria, and so I dosed him with our malaria medication, which was a form of quinine. It was called Kinemax. And it was the most effective thing we had found for malaria. There was all kinds of other ones, but we found that this particular one was quite effective. So that day, I dosed him up, and I felt like I was getting it too. Took my dose. Within a few minutes, he was crying to me, Mom, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Panic in my heart, you know, took over. Just this terrible cold fear hit me like a truck. In seconds, I added up our situation. No 911, no car, no taxis. We were out on the edge of town. I couldn't run out to go get help. I just cried out to God in my heart. I prayed over him. I put my hands on his chest. I said, oh, God, help Eric. Please save Eric. I then had to get a hold of my fear, and this helped both of us. I took him in my arms, and I rubbed his chest. And I said, breathe with me, breathe with me, look at me, breathe with me. And I just took him through relaxation breathing. Slow through your nose, out with your, you know, blow out through your mouth, slowly, slowly. And I just took him through that for about a minute. And he calmed down gradually, gradually. His color returned to his face. And I felt like it was a miracle. I didn't know what had happened. We finally got a taxi. I took him to a clinic. They said, well, it was an allergic reaction to the medication. Never, ever give him that again. And he did have malaria, and they prescribed a different medication. So we felt like God had really, really done a miracle. And so then we're on Thursday. The guys still aren't there. My friend said to me, she says, Margaret, when do we call for help? When do we tell people? And I said, well, not yet, not yet. And we prayed again for the guys. And then on Friday, now we're on Friday, and it just happened to be Christmas Eve, and we knew Christmas was coming. And what could we do to make it special? And I realized I wasn't going to get home. We weren't going to get back to our village. I think, I'm trying to remember, I wanted to call my daughter this morning, and I didn't get time. I don't think we had a phone yet at our home. Like I said, there weren't phones. We eventually, about that year, we got a phone at our house. But I don't think we did yet. So somehow we had to call somebody who took a message that we weren't getting back. And later we found out that they were having a great time. They had made Christmas. They had even figured out a way to make a gingerbread house out of nothing. And they'd pulled their mattresses out in the main area and read each other Christmas stories every night. And I think they delayed the Christmas program till we got back. But other than that, they had a good time. But, you know, I didn't know that at the time. I just knew that my 13-year-old daughter was going to be alone for Christmas, and that really tugged at my heart. And I was getting fearful that something had happened to the guys because of this history of hostility in the area that they went into. But we decided, well, we've got to make Christmas special, so let's figure this out. So we got a taxi and went into the city, third world country city. So we're talking about outdoor market, craziness everywhere. Predominantly Muslim, probably 99.9% Muslim in that particular city. So where are we going to find Christmas? And we started going in the shops, and we're as impressed to look here and there, and we found a little bit of this and a little bit of that that looked colorful. I remember I got some garlands and some candles, and somehow we found some gifts. I think it was soccer balls for the boys, and there was a little girl, 4 years old. We found a little plastic doll. We had four gifts. We wrapped them up and something. I don't know what it was. I don't think we had wrapping paper, but we wrapped them up and took them home. Well, guess who was there when we got back? Our husband's wondering, where were you ladies? You're out shopping, of course. And we were just so relieved to see them that all was peace on earth. And so we fixed up our little coffee table there, and we put our garlands and we put our candles, and we gathered around that table. Never have I been so thankful for a Christmas. And even though family was everywhere, it just felt so good to be together and to be around there. We sang Christmas carols, holding hands, and just feeling so blessed to have our husbands back safely. All of our children were safe. Eric was safe. God had answered our prayers. Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright.
That was a wonderful story. Thank you. It kind of leads into this story, because this is the story of Mary. And Mary started out talking to an angel, and she didn't understand that at all. That was a strange thing. Even though they'd expected it, she didn't understand it. But she thought about it, and she took it in. She says, I'm going to be your servant, God. Later on, she didn't always trust what God said. She ran off to her cousins, of course, and got some more encouragement there, so that was good. But it's hard sometimes. You know what God says. You know you can trust him. You know you don't have to be afraid. But in this song, she's riding along on a donkey, getting ready to have her baby. And that's what it's about. God helping us through the troubles when we don't always trust automatically. We're very human. We are not all the way trusting God, and I want to be, but I need God to help me be strong, like this song says. I have traveled many moonless nights, cold and weary with a babe inside, and I wonder what I've done. Holy Father, you have come and chosen me now to carry your son. I am waiting in a silent prayer. I am frightened by the load I bear. In a world as cold as stone, must I walk this path alone? Be with me now, be with me now. Breath of heaven, hold me together, be forever near me. Breath of heaven, breath of heaven, lighten my darkness, pour over me your holiness, for you are holy. Breath of heaven, do you wonder, as as you watch my face. If a wiser one should have had my place, but I offer all I am for the mercy of your plan. Help me be strong. Help me be. Help me. Breath of heaven, hold me together. Be forever near me. Breath of heaven. Breath of heaven, lighten my darkness. Pour over me your holiness, for you are holy. Breath of heaven, hold me together. Be forever near me. Breath of heaven. Breath of heaven, lighten my darkness. Pour over me your holiness, for you are holy. Breath of heaven, breath of heaven, breath of heaven.
This story is called A Christmas Prayer. It was 1881, and Matt was 15 years old. His world had fallen apart. He had in his mind this new rifle for Christmas. And it wasn't coming. They didn't have enough money in the house. He went into what you would call a pity party. All he could think about was the rifle, and it's not coming. Now, they had done the chores early that night. He didn't know why particularly, but his dad had him come out, and they did the chores early, and he figured it was so that his dad would have more time to read the Bible. It was Christmas Eve, 1881. So he resigned himself to that fact, and after supper, he took off his boots, sat them down, and then he went and laid out beside the fire on the floor, waiting for his dad to go pick up the Bible and begin reading. But the dad didn't go pick up the Bible. Dad went over, bundled himself back up, went out the door. Now Matt's like, I don't know what's going on. This doesn't look right, and I'm not getting a rifle. Didn't have long to think, because Dad came back in, said, Matt, get yourself bundled up. It's cold outside. Turned around, went back out. Matt obviously could see it was cold outside because there was ice on Dad's beard. Now he was not only in a pity party, but now he was mad. Why is Dad going outside this time of night, wanting me to go outside this time of night? We've already done the chores. There's nothing left on this earth that I can think of to do outside. But he also knew that when Dad said, you need to come, there wasn't much patience with people not coming. So he got up and he got his cloak, gloves, hat, headed for the door. And just as he got near the door, he looked over at his mother, and she had this strange smile on her face. He's like, something's going on, but I don't have a clue what. Walked out the door, and as he walked out the door, there in front of him was Dad. He had the work team hitched to the old sled. In Matt's mind, that meant work. And not a little bit of work when it was the work team. Matt walked out, got onto the sled with his dad. Dad pulled the wagon or the sled around the house over to the woodshed, got out. Matt got down too. Said, Matt, I need your help taking the low sideboards off of the sled. We're going to put the tall sideboards on. Now to Matt, that meant now we're going to work a little hard, but now we're going to work really hard, and I'm not going to be back very soon. He was not happy. Rifle still prominent in his mind, and now I got to work all night. Well, with that, Dad disappeared into the woodshed. After they got the tall sideboards on, come out with an armload of wood, put it in the sled. Matt couldn't hold it any longer. Dad, what are you doing? Dad stopped and looked at him. He said, Matt, have you been over to the Widow Jensen's place lately? Well, in his mind, he said, yeah, so what? But he didn't say that to his father. He said, yeah. Yeah, I've been over there. What about that? Well, he said, Dad said, well, I went by there. I rode by there this morning. And when I rode by, just as I was going by their house, I looked over, and there was a little Jakey. He was over there where the woodpile used to be, and he was digging around on the ground looking for little sticks of wood that he could use in a fire. He said, they're out of wood, Matt. With that, Dad turned around, went back in the woodshed, and started carrying wood out. And, of course, Matt, well, I better carry wood. So he starts carrying wood, and it wasn't just a little bit of wood. They filled that whole sled clear to the top. And all the time Matt was carrying wood, all he could think about, besides the rifle, was, I spent all summer dragging that wood off the mountain. I cut it into lengths, I split it, stacked it, and now we're hauling it off. When he got done putting the wood in, Dad said, that's enough. Couldn't hold anymore. He turns around, Dad turns around, walks over to the smokehouse, comes out of the smokehouse with a big ham and a side of pork, or bacon, brought it over, handed that to Matt, put that in the sled, turned back around, disappeared, said, wait there, Matt. Comes back with his big sack of flour on his right shoulder and a smaller bag in his left hand. Now Matt's like, oh, now what? Dad got close, said, Dad, what's in the bag? Dad said, they're shoes, Matt, they're shoes. And a little bit of candy. Little Jakey, he was wrapped in gunny sacks around his feet. And of course, you can't have Christmas without candy. That's all he said. Put the stuff in the wagon, got in the wagon, or the sled, and headed for the Jensen's. Now, the Jensen's place was 2 miles away. Mrs. Jensen had been widowed about a year earlier. And so she was alone with 3 kids, the oldest of which was about 8 years old at that time. Matt wasn't concerned with that. What he was concerned about was now Dad's giving away all our stuff. And he's going through it and he said, well, we got plenty of meat. We got plenty of produce. We got a lot of wood. Of course, then he thought, well, the wood that was left was in log form, so now he's got to cut it all up, split it, stack it again. And he thought, I have no idea why Dad thinks it's our responsibility to go 2 miles away when they got closer neighbors. Why are we doing this? But never said a word to Dad, and it was a quiet ride to the Jensen's house. He was an unhappy boy, 15 years old. They came up to the Jensen's house on the blind side of the house, so they couldn't see from the house, pulled up, unloaded the wood as quietly as they could, Matt grabbed the meat, Dad grabbed the sack of flour and the bag with the shoes in it, headed for the door, knocked on the door when they got there, and the door cracked open just a little bit. From inside, a kind of a quiet, tentative voice said, who's there? Well, it's Luke Miles, Matt's dad said. It's Luke Miles and my son Matt. Can we come in for a bit? Door opened up, and when they stepped in, Matt could see that Mrs. Jensen had a blanket wrapped around her shoulders. Over by the fire, there was 3 little kids huddled under a blanket. A little bitty fire, no warmth hardly could come out of. They were sitting around that fire, and he's like, whoa, this isn't good. But nobody said anything, and Matt's dad said, we brought you some stuff. So Matt put the meat on the table, and Dad set the flour down. Then he handed Mrs. Jensen the bag with the shoes in it. Matt was watching her pretty close, so she takes the shoes, she starts pulling them out one by one. There was one for her and one for each of the kids. And Matt saw her grab her lip to keep it from trembling and tears running down her face. And he's like, oh, man. She couldn't say anything. She looked like she wanted to. Matt thought, oh. And then Mr. Miles said, we brought some more stuff too, Mrs. Jensen. We brought you some wood. Matt, can you go out and get this wood and bring it in? And I want you to fill that up in there so she doesn't have to go out for a while and get that fire started and roaring in here. Matt turns around, he walks out. But he walked out a different boy. He didn't go out the same boy. So when he went out, all he could think of was those little kids huddled there and Mrs. Jensen. Boy, he's like, I've given a lot of presents away in my life, but never one that meant so much and made so much difference. He could see we're saving their lives. So Matt's like gathered up the wood and he went back in there. Roaring fire got going, and then Matt's watching Dad and he's over there passing out candy and things get light in there and joyful, and the kids are smiling and happy, and he noticed a smile come across Mrs. Jensen's face that he thought, man, that probably hasn't been there for a long time. Everybody was happy and talking, and then Matt's dad said, well, before we go, we need you all to try those shoes on. So Mrs. Jensen again starts taking the shoes and trying them on. And, well, just prior to that, let me stop for a minute. Before he said that, she had turned to Matt's dad, Luke, and said, you must be an answer to prayer. The children and I have been praying that God would send an angel to spare us. Sort of like your story there. The angel spared your son. You must be the angel. Now, Matt had never thought of his dad in those terms, but he realized as he started thinking about it, all the times that Dad unselfishly had given stuff to him, helped his mother, and then he started reciting through his mind all the times he'd helped other people. And he's like, Dad is quite a guy. And that's when Mrs. Jensen, Dad had her taking the shoes and trying them on the kids. And as they tried them on, every one of them fit. Now Matt's just, in Scottish, I guess, bamboozled. Couldn't figure out what. And so he's going, well, if he's doing the Lord's work and the Lord asked him to do that, the Lord could give him the right sizes. That was what was in his mind. That's all he could think of. And they all fit. And Mrs. Jensen, of course, tears coming down her face again, was just like so thankful that she had something there and that God had provided for them that day. Then Matt's dad said, well, we got to go. And so he got up to leave, but he said, the missus wants you to come over for supper. Or not for supper. Wants you to come over tomorrow for Christmas dinner. So we're going to have turkey. And when you come over, we want you to bring, we want everybody, because we want little kids there. Because Matt had grown to 15. He had two older brothers, two older sisters who had married and gone away. And he said, we're going to have a turkey. And I can be a little cantankerous if I have to eat too much turkey. I don't want to eat all that. So they said, okay, and they would come, and Matt's dad said, well, we'll be there about 11 o'clock to pick you up tomorrow. And out the door they went, over to the sled. But Matt was a different boy. When he climbed on that sled, he couldn't feel the cold. He was warm. And a joy had filled his heart that he had never felt before, ever. He had never felt like that before. And on the way home, as they went home, he was thinking about that. And then his dad turned to him and said, Matt, I want you to know something. Yesterday morning, we didn't have enough money to pick up your rifle. But, or yesterday, we didn't have enough money to pick up a rifle for you, so we weren't going to get one. But somebody came by, a man that owed me money, and he had owed it for quite a while, and he paid us. He wanted to make things right. After he had paid us, Mom and I were really happy. We thought, now we're going to get to get Matt his rifle. And so Dad had gotten on horse and headed for town. And that's when he had passed little Jakey out there trying to gather wood up. He said, when I saw little Jakey out there with gunny sacks wrapped around his feet, I knew what I had to do, Matt. And so I spent the money that was going to buy you a rifle on shoes and candy. And I hope that's all right with you, Matt. Of course, Matt said he was tears coming down his eyes again. He couldn't talk, but he, in his heart, he says, that's wonderful with me, Dad. And he said, he said, or at least that rifle had gone way down in importance on his list. And what he could see, every time he would split wood, every time he went past the Jensens, was a mother, tears running down her face, with a gratitude so full of, so a heart so filled with gratitude, she couldn't speak. Three little kids beaming with smiles that the dad had each picked up and hugged close to him. And Matt could see that they missed their dad. And he was thankful he had his. And every time he split that wood, he thought of that night, how he rode home with his dad, and that peace had filled his heart, the joy of what had happened. And Dad had given him the best Christmas of his life.
Roy's Tale, The Visitors, a poem by Neil MacLeod. It was a chilly evening. We were gathered round the fire, a company of neighbors that we love and admire. Each were telling stories. They eyed me and said, "Roy, tell us a good one of when you were just a boy." I adjusted my keffiyeh, eased forward on the seat, arranged the collar of my robe so it was straight and neat. Then, taking one sip from my bowl while thinking out my plan, I looked around and eyed them back, and softly I began. I've been a shepherd all my life. I know these hillsides well. And now, well over 70, I have a tale to tell. One night like this, when I was just a lad of 7 years old. My expecting mother said, "Get your coat. It's already turning cold. Tonight, you're going with the men to keep watch o'er the flock. We have visitors staying with us. Hark, I hear their knock. They've all come to be counted. Augustus has said so. The place is packed. I had to let that other couple go." So I went with my father and my uncle to the hills. The air was clear and we could see our small town in the rills. It seemed to be just nestled there, so silent and so still. And here and there a spark of light came flashing up the hill. It was really beautiful as we gazed there alone, watching quietly by the sheep so they wouldn't roam. But that night, something happened that we'd never seen before. So sit back now, my brothers, and I'll tell you what we saw. The wind came moaning through the trees. It whistled and it sang, like a chorus at the temple when the sacrifice began. The rushing clouds before us transformed to an angel winging, and this, the message that it gave, came to us through the singing. "Fear not, for I bring to you good news for all mankind. A Savior is given today, and this shall be the sign. In Bethlehem, town of David, in a manger all forlorn, all wrapped up in swaddling clothes, the baby has been born." And there was with that angel a marvelous heavenly throng, and this the message I recall that echoed through their song. "Glory be to God on high, and peace to men on earth who have his favor, for today it is the Savior's birth." Then we went running down the hill as fast as we could go. I had a lamb around my neck bumping to and fro. There at the outskirts of our town, in a stable bare and small, we found the blessed baby Jesus lying in a stall. He wasn't sad or crying. He made no alarming sound. His mother Mary smiled at him with Joseph looking down. All the cattle were watching. It was holy, they could tell. We gathered round him on the straw, and on our knees we fell. We left there telling everyone what we had seen that night, spreading it through Bethlehem with the morning light. And when I told my mother, she remembered with a swoon that they were the same couple for whom she hadn't room. The little town was humming, but you know, it wasn't long before the census was all over and the visitors were gone. All except the Holy Family. They're the ones who stayed. And we watched carefully over them and for their safety prayed. Now, in the weeks that followed, my own mother came to term, and I soon had a tiny baby brother of my own. One night, we had more visitors who came from somewhere far. They said they found their way to us by following a star. When we looked in the sky above, we saw that it was true. There was a bright star with a tail shining in the view. Those visitors came bearing gifts for the newborn babe. Dejectedly, my mother explained the big mistake they'd made. She said, "You've got the wrong house. You want the Messiah. They're staying at the cottage by the farm, a little higher." Before they left to follow on, something strange they told. Don't tell anyone again. Do not tell a soul. We did not realize at that time how our lives would be changing, that with the prophecy fulfilled, the world was rearranging. Soon, more visitors appeared in ranks, row on row. They were looking for Jesus. They asked us, did we know? I lost my baby brother and my mother on that day. Soldiers on King Herod's behest marched in to our dismay. My mother tried resisting. She covered the baby she adored, but they just threw them to the ground and stabbed them with a sword. I've been a shepherd all my life. I know these hillsides well. And now, well over 70, I have a tale to tell. I saw my Savior at his birth. I knew when he had died, the sky went black and hid the sun. Earth trembled far and wide. But let me tell the good news. He rose and went to heaven, and I have known the truth of him since I was only 7. He's waiting there for us beside his Father's throne, and if we just but follow him, he'll claim us as his own.
I feel like somebody already started my story because I was going to start out with once upon a time. But that line's already gone, so now I'm lost and my notes aren't here. I don't know how many of you know that I can tend to be a little forgetful. That's the word. Yeah, I can be forgetful and my words can be forgetful, and sometimes I can show up to church in really strange situations. And you know what I've learned? It wasn't strange for God. He already knew what was going to happen. And he places us in times and places and situations. And when it works out well, when things are encouraging, we're pretty happy. God did it, right? We'll give God the honor. But you know, this past year in my life has been a little strange. I can't think of one area of my life that I could put my finger on that something hasn't happened in. I mean, January 5th, I had shoulder surgery. And we're now at December 24th, and guess what? My shoulder hurts more than it did the day before I had surgery. So that didn't go real well. And I've had pain every day since then. I've had a few days off. I guess I shouldn't say every day. Well, you know, then there have just been a lot of things. And, you know, I got to thinking, if God would just give me a forecast so I would know what was coming, right? If God would give me a forecast, I'd know to stay home and keep my door locked. Have any of you guys ever felt that way? Well, that's how I was feeling. And, you know, I was reading the story. How many of you knew that there were storms across most of the United States yesterday and today? Do you realize how many people were out on the roads in those storms? Think about it. How many times have you heard the weathermen say, stay off the roads, and you went because your errand was important? You know, it says there were people out, it said, and life-threatening cold temperatures and dangerous wind chills will create a potentially life-threatening hazard for travelers who become stranded, forecasters have warned. Well, I knew I wasn't going to get stranded, so that was okay. That was for those other people who were going to get stranded, right? So, well, maybe God did give me a forecast. Let's take a look here. First Peter 4, and verse, I'm not going to find it here. There it is. We're going to start with 13. No, we'll start with 12. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. Well, yeah, I went out and I got stranded. That was strange. How was I to know I was going to get stranded? Well, God told me I was going to get stranded this year. You know how I know? Because he knew back when he had this written. He told me I'd get stranded. And did I listen to the weather forecast? No, that's pretty much been my year. And I've gotten really discouraged. I'm sure all of you have, at different times in your lives, gone through just some really dark, overwhelming times. But I can say that my prayer is always, God, keep my eyes on you. I may wallow in the morbidity of my life right now, but I know there's something else. And it said, we knew strange things were going to happen. But rejoice in as much as you are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, you shall be glad also with exceeding joy. Well, I don't think that was in the Bible before last week. Because last week I was reading and I'm like, you mean all of this is so that I can be excited when Jesus comes? Can you imagine if we had wonderful lives walking on this earth and Jesus came, it'd be sort of like almost anticlimactic. But God knew we needed trials. We needed, dare I say, the second greatest gift we were given for Christmas this year, or I was, suffering. Yep. Suffering, I have found, is God's second greatest gift to me because it kept me real. It kept me knowing that I had a Father that no matter how insane my life got, how off track my life felt, I bet many of you have heard this. I'm going to pull it because I don't want to misquote it. This, a dear man, Ralph Martin, it was his favorite verse, and it became mine by being near him. The Bible shows us God in his high and holy place, not in a state of inactivity, not in silence and solitude, but surrounded by 10,000 times 10,000s and thousands and thousands of holy beings, all waiting to do his will. Through these messengers, he is in active communication with every part of his dominion. By his Spirit, he is everywhere present. Through the agency of his Spirit and his angels, he ministers to the children of men. How many of you think you know which verse or what quote the rest of the quote is? I have it on a magnet on the back of my front door. Above the distractions of earth, God sits enthroned. If you know it, you can say it with me. Above the distractions of earth, God sits enthroned. All things are open to his divine survey, and from his great and calm eternity, he orders that which his providence sees best. God doesn't accidentally take us through the problems we face in life. We need those problems. If God gave us an easy life, we'd never question our own motives. We'd never question, am I where I need to be with God? Those struggles, the suffering, whether it's small or large, that we go through, are God's second greatest gift.
I think I did this song about, 35 years ago. and I'm trying to remember, but I think back then I held our oldest son in my arms. He was about 9 months old for a prop. I can't imagine how I could have made it all the way through a song like that, holding him, because I'm sure he wouldn't have put up with that. So maybe I'm mistaken. I don't know. Anyway.
He was around.
He was, yeah. He was around.
You want to sing?
Nope. Yep. Okay. How could it be this baby in my arms sleeping now so peacefully? The Son of God, the angel said, how could it be? Lord, I know he's not my own, not of my flesh, not of my bones. Still, Father, let this baby be the Son of my love. Father, show me where I fit into this plan of yours. Father to the Son of God. Lord, for all my life I've been a simple carpenter. How can I raise a king? How can I raise a king? He looks so small, his face and hands so fair. And when he cries, the sun just seems to disappear. But when he laughs, it shines again. How could it be? Show me where I fit into this plan of yours. How can a man be father to the Son of God?
Lord, for all my life I've been a simple carpenter. How can I raise a king? How can I raise a king? How could it be this baby in my arms, sleeping now so peacefully? The Son of God, the angel said, how could it be?
The closing song after the benediction. And before the benediction, I'd just like to say I've been blessed this morning. Just incredible. Thank you, God, for the tools that you've given us to remember this remarkable point in history that we focused on each Christmas, that we've been able to focus on today. Be with us as we leave this place, and let may the spirit of your love and your gift be present throughout this coming year. Amen.
We're going to sing our closing song, 132. Oh, Come All Ye Faithful. Why don't you stand and sing that with us? Well, there's one over here. One night, yeah.
Come, let us adore him. Oh, come.